This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
Hello, this is the Inch Podcast, recorded February 28th, 2012. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. Happy to be back with all of you great podcast listeners, and happy to welcome in our staff for tonight's discussion as we record this. Inch editor, Mike Eidelbus. Hi, Bus.
Hello, one and all.
How's it going?
It is going.
Yeah, that's about what we'll take that at this time of the year.
Yes, we will.
Hockey East senior writer Kevin Zeese. Hi, Kevin.
Howdy. But 2 minutes early, or 2 hours early, but happy leap day, everybody.
Leap day, yes, as we record.
By the time they hear it, it'll be leap day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Give you something to do with all this extra time you have on your hands. And CCHA senior writer James Dowd. Hi, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Condolences on your Islanders loss this evening.
See, we usually don't get into the Islanders until much later in the podcast.
I know. I just, you know.
If the Islanders drinking game is in effect, we need to get the people going. Off and running here. So, there you go. Playoff hockey for you.
That's right. I'm excited.
And for me. And for Atlantic Hockey.
And for Atlantic Hockey.
So, I guess that's as good a place to start as any. James, let's get to some CCHA chatter and first-round playoff series. Your thoughts?
It's going to be an interesting weekend. I guess starting out with Northern Michigan and Bowling Green might not sound like that exciting of a series on the surface, but if you think back to last year, Bowling Green actually upset Northern in the same series with a double overtime goal in the third game on the road, and so it'd be exciting to see if they can come up with a similar effort this year. So I guess kind of looking to see that, and then the 8-9 game, Notre Dame and Ohio State. You know, I guess both those teams are trying to revive their season a little bit after strong starts. You know, two pretty competitive teams, and it'd be interesting to see there if either one of them can kind of play their way into the national tournament. And then we got Lake Superior and Alaska, two teams with pretty good goaltenders. You know, maybe not the most exciting teams in the world to watch, but, you know, they're both pretty competitive, hardworking teams, so it should be a hard-fought series.
They'll reseed those bottom three series, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I didn't know because of the 4-5 match that's already etched in the quarterfinal round. Interesting setup there for sure in the CCHA.
You know, I think what even, you know, an added dynamic, I guess, to that is I think Notre Dame's a pretty good matchup for Ferris State in the second round. If all these seeds hold true and there is no reseeding and no upsets, then Ferris State's looking pretty tough matchup in the second round after getting that first round bye with the conference title. So if seeds hold true, that could be an interesting second round thing on the horizon.
Yeah, that's what my next question was going to be, do any of the six teams playing this weekend have a chance to win four games and make it to the Joe? And I would agree that I think Notre Dame's got to be that team.
Yeah, I think so. I think they present some matchup problems. They're deep. They have several lines of pretty good defensemen, and if the goaltending will hold up for them, I know we sound like a broken record with goaltending when we talk about Notre Dame, but they've just got a little more depth and talent up front, especially if Anders Lee gets going. You know, TJ Tynan tied for the conference scoring title. You know, they've got some veteran guys like Billy Mayday in there that can get things done when it comes to playoff time. So that's I think that'd be a really interesting matchup in the second round. Now, if there's any of these first round upsets, I find it hard to see any of those teams winning the first round and second round. Maybe Ohio State can give fairness to Dayton, but you know, if seeds hold true, that's a second round matchup I'm looking at as a team that could get to the Joe.
Well, what about the fact that an upset would would maybe move Notre Dame down the line. Do you think they could beat Western Michigan or Michigan in a three-game series on the road?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think the same things apply in either one of those matchups. I guess the thing that I think Michigan and Western Michigan have is they got a lot of people back from, you know, from a year ago, and those are two teams that made it to the Joe, and Western Michigan, if I remember right, upset Michigan and then played a pretty good game against Miami in the CCHA championship and made the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I'm just looking at the experience factor for the playoffs for not that Notre Dame, I mean, Notre Dame was a Frozen Four team last year, so this, you know, they certainly have that, I guess, that equal effect. But when I look at Notre Dame against Fair State, you know, this Fair State team a few years ago made it to the Joe, but, you know, they haven't been in the national tournament for a while. You know, this kind of success is new to them. Without the scoring depth and the truly dynamic playmakers, I think that they're a team that might be right for the upset, whereas the Western Michigan and Michigan teams are a little more experienced and maybe a little more well-rounded while having, you know, maybe Chase Ballasty at the top for Western Michigan and any number of guys, Chris Brown and Alex Guptill and DiGiuseppe and guys at Michigan who've really proven themselves as guys who can take over games when they need it.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you look at the first round in the CCHA. If I'm a Michigan or a Western Michigan, I think that maybe I'm hoping that the top seeds all advance, because I think I would rather take my chances against Northern or Lake State than have Notre Dame come in, just because.
Oh, no question.
Because you don't. I mean, the pieces are obviously there. I mean, we've seen them play well this season, and you know, they went, as you mentioned, to the Frozen Four last year. So we've seen what they've been capable, what they have been capable of, and what they are capable of. You know, over the past two seasons, and you know. You get the sense that they might be a ticking time bomb, just waiting to go off, and you know, and when they do, somebody's gonna get flattened, and you know, if you're Michigan or Western Michigan, I think you'll gladly roll the dice against Lake State or a Northern Michigan.
Yeah, there's no question. If I'm either one of those teams, you'd rather play Lake State or Northern. And I'm not saying that Notre Dame couldn't beat either one of those teams. I'm just thinking that. You know, that experience that the Western and Michigan have, the knowledge of, you know, that one bad game or I guess in the quarterfinal round, two bad games can end it all for you. I'm thinking that knowledge they have will serve them well, where Ferris is a little further removed from that experience.
You know, the other thing you have to remember, too, with Northern especially, and I guess to a lesser extent Lake Superior State, Northern hasn't been all that terrific away from home
No. This
season, and you know, typically they're a far different team when they're in Marquette, and you know, by extension in the UP, because they did pretty well against Tech and Lake State this year. But you know, get them on the south side of the bridge, and they're a much different team.
Yeah, no, agreed. And, you know, I looked at something, and, you know, it's not just, this isn't any kind of myth about Northern Michigan. I mean, just take a look here. It was, you know, I was looking at it earlier this year, and they're 10-2-5 at home. And not only that, their leading scorer, Tyler Grahn, has 26 of his 36 points at home. So, I mean, it really is pervasive throughout the entire team. So I guess I do like them to win that first round matchup. Even though they showed last year they were prone to upset. But, yeah, once they get on the road, I think they're a much more beatable team. What is it, 6-10 and let me look at this.
Yeah, you said they're what, 10-2 and
– Yeah, they're 10-2-5 at home, so that means they're 6-10-1 on the road. Am I right?
Yeah, that's yes. Yep, you're right.
So you know, I think they're a pretty beatable team once they get outside of the UP. Yeah, and you know, that even that 6-10-1, like you said, if you take out games at Lake Superior and Michigan Tech, you know, they really
They won one at Tech for sure, and they win two at Lake State.
They won one at Lake State in December.
Okay,
yeah.
So
Yeah, so definitely.
So that's 4-10-1.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's. I guess in summary, there's definitely no question that if I'm Michigan or Western Michigan, I'd rather play Lake Superior or Northern than Notre Dame. And you know, I kind of have this feeling that the seeds are going to hold in the first round.
Yeah, I think so too. Although I mean, really, of the you know, I think Notre Dame is probably going to handle Ohio State just because Ohio State has pretty much gone through the same thing Notre Dame has over the past six or so weeks. And, you know, with Notre Dame at home, it's probably going to be enough, I think, for them to get through. You know, the Alaska Lake State thing is that's pretty much a coin flip.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, there's 11 points between them in the standings, but you know, I was taking a look at it this afternoon a little bit, and I just don't think there's much to choose between those teams. I think Alaska is kind of underachieved this year, and Lake State has maybe played, you know, up to its potential. So maybe they're really similar teams that one kind of played at the bottom of its, you know, its potential, like, arc of a season, and one played at the top of it. But you know, really, when you put those two teams side by side, they both have really strong goaltending, and you know, they play a good physical game. They got a few guys who can score, but not really anybody, not really any game breaking kind of offensive talent. And so, it's just a matter of you know, playing good, clean, mistake free hockey for either of those teams. And I think either one of them could do that 2 out of 3 times. And if there's any team that you know, can handle going on the road, it's Alaska. They're you know, they obviously do a lot of traveling, and so, you know, I think they're not fazed by that the same way, you know, a team like Northern Michigan might be.
Let's any more thoughts on that before I transition away from CCHA playoffs? Good.
I don't know if there's any more thoughts, but it, you know, provided we don't podcast before they start the quarterfinal round in the CCHA. I mean, that Michigan State at Miami series in 2 weekends is, I mean, that's a huge series for a number of reasons beyond just, you know, moving on to the Joe.
Yeah. Now, there's national tournament criteria at stake in that series for sure. And a lot of it also depends on what happens with other games. So you get that aspect of it. I want to talk about Boston College a little bit. We moved him to the top of the Inch Power rankings, and there was really little debate in that. I mean, there were a couple teams we considered, but for what BC is doing right now, it's pretty remarkable. And the fact that they won 9 in a row, the fact that they won both of their games last weekend by shutout and scored 10 goals. Once again, this is a team that's really hitting its stride at the right time of the year, Kevin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I think their key is that they've started to get some more consistent goaltending again. As we mentioned with the power rankings, Parker Milner reclaim the starting job after their last two losses, that sweep up in Maine, and since then he's averaging 1.3 a game, which, hey, you know, you're giving up a goal and a half even a game, you're going to win 9 times out of 10 anyway. So
yeah, where are they getting their offense from lately?
Lately, it's obviously when you score 7 goals, you're getting it from everybody. But
we had mentioned Kreider busting the Trackler a couple weeks ago.
It might have been I think it was the first one actually, because he came off that. There was a weekend there early in the. When did we put the first one out? Was it in mid January? Or was it early February?
No, it was January.
Anyway, whenever we did it, he had come off a weekend where he had scored a bunch of goals. So, yeah. As much as you can garner from or gleam from watching a game or two on TV here and there, and
they're on TV again this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, looking at box scores, it seems like they've just, everybody's been pitching in. You know, obviously the top line's been real good for them, but
yeah, the Almeida, Arnold, and Whitney group had 11 points. I mean, they put four goals together in that 7-0 win over Providence. So
the other one that's starting to come back on is Johnny Gaudreau. Started out real strong and kind of hit a lull there in the midseason, much like the rest of the team did, I think. But he's jumped back up to third. I mean, he's almost averaging a point a game for them as well right now. So they're getting scoring from all over the place, but it's definitely an impressive group to watch right now.
I want to make a parallel here between this team and the team from two seasons ago. The team that won the championship in 2010 in Detroit.
Oh, you see, you could have just said 2010.
It doesn't matter.
I know.
There was a point, you know, BC that season had a rough stretch. They were 10-3-2. In early December, basically they won their last game before the holidays to go to 10-3-2. Then they struggled for about 6 weeks, and they were 17-10-2 after a loss to Northeastern in mid-February. Then they won every game the rest of the way, finished 29-10-3, yep. And obviously smoked both of their opponents in the NCAA tournament, or in the Frozen Four, and that was also the year they beat Yale in the regional final, like 9-7, or,
yeah.
You know, that game that was far closer. This year, BC on November 4th, they had beaten Maine to go to 8-1. On January 21st, they were swept at Maine,
yep.
And their record was 14-10-1. So fast forward to today, they've won 9 in a row, and they're 23-10-1.
Yeah, it is a very similar arc.
Yeah, so, you know, they're just they're figuring things out. They haven't gone – I don't think they had a similar arc that the year they won in Denver. I think they were pretty much – locked in that season.
Yeah, that was a good year for them.
Although that season, I guess you look at it, they had a bad last 5 weeks of the regular season.
And, right.
And then turned it around, so.
Let's talk about some teams that have had some ups and downs, specifically Merrimack and UMass Lowell. First half of the year, it was Merrimack was the story, and then they kind of came back to earth, maybe. When the schedule started to toughen up a little bit, and now we've seen a little bit of that out of UMass Lowell. Is this just a case of, you know, 20 wins? I mean, certainly is an amazing turnaround season for that program. Is that a case where maybe things are just catching up to them? But I still think it's a pretty good team that could make some noise down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that they could still make some noise. I think it's still a reasonable expectation that if they get into that they could get to the Garden for the semis and the championship weekend there. And I think if they do that, they've got a pretty good shot at getting into the NCAA tournament as well. Having talked with Coach Norm Bazin a couple times this year, I don't get the sense that he's necessarily the type that's going to allow his players to kind of focus on where they stand in the schedule, in the league rankings and all that. But you can't help but wonder if maybe there's a little bit of that going on with them, where, you know, this is a team that won 5 games last year, and now they're at 20 and you know, you start to wonder if maybe that's what they're kind of looking at a little bit. But Merrimack, I think we've kind of looked at all season and said that they were going to go as far as their goal scoring was going to take them. And I think that's pretty much held up the case. Their goaltending is fine, is good. Joe Cannata is one of the top goaltenders in the country, I would say. And you know, I think as long as they're able to, you know, to find consistent and timely scoring, I think that they're in a good position as well to make a little bit of a run as well.
What team has the most to gain this weekend and the final weekend of the regular season?
To me, I would say that the two that stand out are Maine and Merrimack. It's pretty well assured that those two teams are going to be the 4 or 5 spots within Hockey East. And, you know, it's one thing to know that that's who you're going to play. It's another to have home ice for those for that first round series, and I think that's going to be critical. Is to see can Maine only plays once this weekend, so can Merrimack get enough points to tie and leapfrog them? You know, it's something that, you know, Merrimack has never had home ice in back to back seasons before, and I think that would be a tremendous accomplishment for that program as well to be able to say that, but. That's definitely the two teams that I've kind of got my eye on this weekend.
Yeah, and that Merrimack series is a home and home against UMass, and that's a UMass team that won at Maine and at BU in the not too recent past. So
yeah,
or not too distant past. I mean,
we had looked at UMass a couple weeks ago and pretty much said that they were a team that couldn't really win away from home, but once you got them on their rink, that they were going to be pretty much unbeatable. And at this point now, it's sort of a crapshoot. There's not really any rhyme or reason, although they are fighting to get into the playoffs as well and grab a spot too. So it's not as though they've got something that, you know, or a team that's not got anything to play for.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be good stuff. Wanted to send out a couple shout outs. If you've seen the power rankings and you read the first shift, you notice that we're big on saluting the teams that have taken care of business. And just as you know, Merrimack and Maine have that opportunity in Hockey East this weekend, got to look at a couple other teams that really did the job. One of those being Harvard, won their last two games of the regular season. You know, they were at home. They're playing against St. Lawrence and Clarkson, who were middle of the pack in ECAC hockey. Came back both nights, trailed in those games, and it's a team that hasn't scored a ton of goals this year, but really found a way and got those two wins. And when everything settled out, they were actually in third place because Colgate lost twice. So Harvard picked 12th in the preseason poll by the media, ended up third. So there was one, and we talked in the first shift as well about how the top of the pack in Atlantic Hockey had the six teams that had a shot, and they ended up being in a position where nobody really capitalized, nobody won both, but Air Force ended up first in that conference. At the bottom of that league was kind of an interesting story with Sacred Heart, who just had a terrible season in terms of record, just 3 wins going into the final weekend overall, but they won twice against Army and moved up to 11th place in the league standings. So everyone had something to play for is kind of what the theme of the year, because everyone's been so balanced, and even the last place games in Atlantic Hockey had some standings implications. So good for Sacred Heart for getting those 2 wins.
Yeah, now they go into the final week or the first round of the playoffs with a little bit of confidence, and yeah, you know, it was their first back to back games. I believe they won all season. But if you look at their record, and this is something I think we talked about earlier in the week, in their last 10, they're 4-4-2.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, prior to that, they were 1-22-1. So if you're coming in at 4-4-2, you're feeling pretty good about where you are. So,
yeah. So, and they'll play Bentley in the first round.
Yeah.
Bentley has had a great year. So. Good for them. And And what else do we want to get into? Do you want to talk about Union a little bit?
Yeah, I think we probably should. I've seen some of the chatter out there that.
Well, it's the typical chatter. I mean, people don't. And it's like we talked about on the last podcast. People want to dismiss things that they don't know much about. For the inherent stereotypes and narrow-mindedness of the general college hockey fan, and we know there's a lot of people who aren't that way.
There's a vocal minority.
Yeah, you got to listen to the people who run their mouths the loudest. But it's a Union team. Obviously, I've followed pretty closely in my ECAC hockey coverage and seen them over the years. So you get to a couple instances, and here's what you like about this Union team. First of all, Troy Grosnick stepping in and replacing Keith Kincaid, a goalie who was an all-league level goalie. And did he get All-America last year?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, All-American guy. He had a chance to sign a pro contract and did. Timing was right. Good idea. Congrats to Keith Kincaid. Lost a couple scores, but returned the bulk of their offense. And they score a bunch of goals. Criticisms come in with, I think, first, they don't know anything about the team. Second, they point at strength of schedule. Well, our stance has always been, and anyone who's listened to this podcast for any duration knows that, you know, the kids don't make the schedule. All they can do is go out and win the games. And Union does that. I mean, they've got, they've got 20 wins and 7 losses and 7 ties. You know, second best winning percentage in the country. And they have the best goal differential. Their scoring margin is higher. So they're winning the games they should win, and they're doing so convincingly. So that's a Union team that really has some experience, and I'll be interested to see. I mean, they look to be in pretty good shape, regardless of their fortunes in the ECAC hockey tournament, to make the national tournament again. And, you know, one of the things I've kind of believed is that you have to go through it once before you can really make a run. Mm-hmm. And I think that game they played last year against a team that went on to win the national championship, you know, in the first round of the NCAA tournament, will help this this veteran Union team.
I think the other thing you have to remember about Union is, you know, they've got a new coach.
Yep.
You know, you kind of forget that that Nate Lehman went to Providence, but, you know, and I think the transition is probably about as seamless of transition as you can have.
Yeah, Rick Bennett was on that staff for 5 years, I think, before getting the head job.
Yeah. But still, it's a change, so.
Yeah, yeah. And he's been a part of the culture and built, because Union really has come a long way. Even before the last 2 years, they were, you know, 7th, 8th, you know, maybe you make a run at 5th or 6th in the league standings. Now they're, you know, legitimately expecting to finish first. And they won the regular season title despite losing at Cornell last Friday, which was a very good game. Those are two pretty good teams there.
I was going to ask you, what happened that night? I mean, it looked, you know, obviously a pretty close game. You know, it sounds like you didn't see anything that discourages you from being a big proponent of theirs in the postseason.
No, I still believe in that team, and Union really wasn't at its best, and still played well enough to have a shot in that game. Cornell was certainly one of the best games they've played all season, and I see that team quite a bit. But the next night, Cornell didn't respond. You know, they played passively, just okay, in a game against RPI, and ended up losing that game in overtime. Whereas, you know, Union responded, went on the road, and won at Colgate. Rick Bennett said after the game Friday at Cornell that he didn't like his team's work ethic. He thought they were outworked a little bit. And you know, I guess it's maybe it's my thinking a little bit that it's not such a bad thing to lose a game and learn some lessons before the postseason starts and you lose that game and your season's over. Yeah. So I think it might have been good timing, and you know, it's a tough game at Cornell with league standing, you know, league title on the line and all those things going on. And Lina has a very strong reputation for a great home ice advantage. And it was true in that night. I mean, it was one of the better, more enthusiastic nights of the season and of the last several years, I think. I'd compare it to a couple playoff series they had against Clarkson in the recent past, that the place was really loud. And, you know, those people were into it. And I noticed that because it was so stark, such a stark difference to the Harvard game, because that game is so almost ceremonial cheering rather than enthusiastic hockey, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
It's more of a ritual.
Yeah, and they were charged up. The fans knew there was something at stake, and they were good. And it was a good game and hard hitting, and both teams are pretty tenacious. Union's forecheck is just unbelievable. Your DF to make smart decisions and move the puck effectively if you're playing against that team, or you're getting trouble. And they've got guys who can burn a few turns.
Yeah, I just noticed that. Three guys with 16 or more goals is...
Yeah, that first line really carries the mail, but they've got other guys who can make plays. I mean, Carr, Welsh, and Juris are unbelievable when they get going. And their power play is just terrific. All those guys are veteran guys. So,
I mean, the thing that impresses me the most about this team, like just looking at it on a surface level, looking at the schedule, is just other than the 4-0 loss to Yale, and then there was a 3-1 loss to Denver. All their losses are, you know, they're single goal losses, and then looking at those games against Denver and Yale, it really boiled down to one bad period.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, this is just the epitome of consistency, and you know, that's what wins this time of year, you know, yeah. not slipping up. So I guess I was kind of on their bandwagon a little bit with you last year, and, you know, I'm ready to be there again.
Yeah, they ran into a hot goalie. I mean, in that first period of the game against Duluth, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ryder was unbelievable.
Well, and that's one thing that always sticks with me when you're talking about them is when you asked Wester, James, when you were talking to Western late last year about whatever, and those guys vouched for Union, they're like, that's the toughest team we played all year, hardest working and, you know, tenacious. And
I mean, the words were, they remind me of Michigan. They remind me of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, from Max Campbell, who was a senior at Western last year. So it's, you know, that conversation, you know, I trusted Gladys' judgment. You know, obviously it's not a team that's on TV a lot. I tried to get some of their games online a little bit. And then just to hear, you know, a respected veteran player like that who's played against some excellent teams, you know, in his 4 years at Western, really had me believing in them. And they've done nothing but further that so far this year.
Yeah.
To me, the big thing that stands out with Union isn't even bigger than just the balance scoring and all that. That's a team with 11 wins on the road this year. I mean, it's one thing to kind of be dominant at home, and you know, a lot of teams will do that, but they've got more wins on the road than they do at home.
Yeah, and they played a ton of road games the first half.
Yeah.
Tons.
Yeah, and you go all the way back to the game they played at Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, they were up 4-0 20 minutes and change into that game.
Yep.
And I know Michigan was scuffling a little bit at that point in time, but still, if you're up 4-0 at Yost 22 minutes into the game, you're doing something right. You know, they end up winning 6-3.
Yeah. Win at Michigan, and then 3 weeks later, win at Merrimack.
And blast Merrimack.
It was 3-1.
Yeah. I thought it was 5-1. I read it wrong.
All Merrimack games are 3-1.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, that was just Merrimack's third loss of the year, too. They were 10-2-2 heading into that. So.
You know, another point about that Michigan game, you get that early lead. You know, Michigan ended up getting three goals, and it's one thing is that, but, you know, they were able to get those insurance goals, I guess, to really put Michigan out of it in the third. You know, that game got from 4-0 to 4-2, I think, early in the third period, and
yeah.
They, you know, that's Ohio State weekend, and, you know, Michigan fans are kind of on a high. They can get a lot of energy into that building, and, you know, Union put a stop to that pretty quickly in the middle of the third period. So, you know, I respect that ability to put a game out of reach, too. That's the sign of a veteran team to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're a good club. They'll be tough.
And not to continually pump their tires here, but I mean, they didn't take any shortcuts with their non-conference schedule, especially on the road. I mean, they went to New Hampshire, they went to Michigan, they went to Merrimack, they went to Denver, and they went to CC.
Yep.
I mean, find me another team in the country that's using their non-conference.
That's
filling their non-conference slate with a dance card like that. I don't think you'll find one.
Yeah.
You know, so
that almost reminds me of like the NCAA basketball. You know, like teams that do that, the mid-major kind of teams, and you know, I kind of think Union should be to the point where they don't have to do that to impress people.
Yeah. Doubt even scarier. You mentioned that's a veteran team. They only have three seniors.
Yeah, and how many of those guys? Are they all full-time players? I think there's two guys.
No, I remember we talked about that before. Like they're not even.
Zajac plays every night. He's their leading point guy. He's got 31 assists. That's pretty big time.
Yeah. Joseph White's played in every game.
But... Yeah, their D, Nolan Joseph White, stay-at-home guy, nice player. And then Brian Yanovich is 16 games this year and 56 in his entire career, so... He's a part-time player for them, but
They have four seniors. Taylor Reed's another part-time senior there. So
yeah,
so four seniors out of that entire roster, and they'll be around for a couple of years to come.
Yeah, we'll see what that all turns out to be. I think Jeremy Welsh's phone might ring.
I think you're probably right there. So, what's his size?
Big. Big. He's a big forward.
Oh, 6'3".
Yeah, he's got a big strong man up front there. So the other thing is with Union's guys, they get a lot of overage. You know, they've got to recruit a little differently. They don't have scholarships, so they recruit a little different kid. Maybe the kind of kid that Quinnipiac targets a little more, and maybe a place like Minnesota State, where you get some overage kids who played Junior B in Canada, and get some kids from out west, and let them continue their hockey careers. So they've got some a lot of 23-year-old guys on that team, and not many of those guys are seniors. So you get that advantage a little bit of men's hockey. And that works for them. They've targeted the right guys. Obviously, they've got some serious talent there.
Yeah, but I don't let that detract. I mean, there are going to be some people that say, "See, who told you?" Like it's because they're all bigger and stronger and more physically mature. But that's not the easiest thing to do. You know, Ferris State's a team that does a lot of that, and there's several other teams in the CCHA, and it doesn't work for them on such a consistent basis like it has last couple for Union. So it's just getting older players doesn't do it.
Right.
They deserve credit.
Yeah.
They got to get the diamonds in the rough, and they've done a good job of doing that.
Well, there you go.
In fact, I'm looking at their roster. They've got two 18-year-olds and one 19-year-old. And that's it for teenagers.
Yeah. That 18-year-old, or one of them, freshman defenseman Shane Gostisbehere, he's out of Florida, born in Florida. Little puck moving defenseman, nice player, very creative. He's got 19 points, a lot of those on the power play. He's a good offensive defenseman. So he does some good stuff.
The other 18 and the 19-year-old are the second and third string goalies.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
And they got pulled in because of the Kincaid situation.
Yeah.
So.
The Gosh Despair guy. Gosh Despair, is that on?
Yeah.
I got that right? Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Chad Langless from Michigan.
Interesting.
Small, move the puck a little bit.
Yeah.
Non-traditional market.
Yeah. I was thinking John Lyles.
Well, let's not get crazy. I'm just kidding. Or were you thinking Bobby Orr?
May 1st scouting report.
Always optimistic.
Duncan Keith.
Duncan Keith turned out to be a pretty good player.
He did. He's good at hockey.
Yeah, he is.
Did he win a Norris?
No. He did.
He did. He did. Okay. Yeah. Norris Trophy. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that really is. I mean,
so
kid was a very talented player, and obviously, I guess I should do the little background that he was at Michigan State when I was at Michigan State, working in their sports information department, and just a nice kid, great kid. But the structure of the Ron Mason system didn't highlight his style of play, let's just say that.
Yeah.
So I think he felt kind of restricted. He's best skater I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In person, at least. I mean, he can skate he can skate backwards faster than most guys can skate forward. Just ridiculous.
Made a nice living for himself.
No, he's done okay.
He was pretty good that year he won the Norris. Obviously, that was a year that I watched a lot of Blackhawks hockey. And, I can remember the few mistakes he made that year.
Yeah.
Including one where he tripped over his own feet while skating backwards in Vancouver. But I remember that because, you know, he didn't make that many mistakes that year. So, really, he was awesome. Pretty impressive.
He lost a few chicklets that year, too, if I remember.
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of CCHA, I guess we're back to that. Hobie Chatter, two guys from that league. Well, you know, let's call it three guys from that league.
I didn't know if you wanted. Okay, go ahead.
That we want to talk about. What are you thinking?
No, nothing. Go ahead. Or do you want to go WCHA?
No, I said CCHA.
No. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about the WCHA at all before we cycle back.
From league to league. There's a chance Jess Myers could join us in progress.
Yeah, let's
here.
Hold out.
Let's give him a chance if he wants to make an appearance. If not, we can speak on his behalf and on behalf of the great league that is the WCHA. But I wanted to get to some Hobie Chatter. Three guys, all with different cases, but all reasonable to consider. Sean Hunwick, Michigan goalie, Riley Smith, Miami forward, Torrey Krug, Michigan State defense. I mean, to me, those got to be the three leaders in the conversation for League Player of the Year, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, and I think because he shared the workload a little bit, he won't fall into that, but if I had to put a fourth in there, I'd have Connor Knapp in that conversation as well, the goalie from Miami. But yeah, I definitely agree. Those have been, pretty much the three top players all year long. All kind of different influence on their team, all outstanding in their own way. I guess maybe talking about Torrey Krug first, I think it's fair to say Michigan State surprised us a little bit this year and performed a lot better than we thought they would. They really didn't have a lot of offensive depth, and we knew that they were going to count on Torrey Krug, who's a pretty good offensive defenseman, to have a strong year and take on a leadership role. He's good defenseman, good offensive defenseman, and passionate about Michigan State hockey and a good leader for the team. And he really grew into that role even more. Finished tied for the conference scoring title. He's the first defenseman to do that, and I think I want to say 25 years, and then he's the first ever defenseman from Michigan State to do that, and as we talked about, they've had some pretty good offensive defensemen go through there. And so, you know, I really think that with the coaching change this year and, you know, some of the defections they've had to pro hockey, like Derek Grant and graduations they've had in recent years, we didn't expect a lot out of him. So he deserves a ton of credit for what he did. And he's been good in the big games. You know, he was there for his team this weekend. The goal on Saturday night, even though they, you know, they lost Friday night, but came back and won Saturday night and kept themselves in the conversation, hit Miami fall, and they would have been hosting that second round series. And then, you know, you think about the big games he's had against Michigan, both this year and last year. He's just been a big time player that's delivered when they need it the most. Is that, do you guys have other thoughts on him? Or?
I agree. Yeah.
I haven't seen enough of him to really have an opinion. I mean, I know he's their guy, and he's. I mean, I think the one thing that stands out for with him is that, you know, as we've mentioned before, Michigan State, you know, they're not a team that has a ton of talent. I mean, I think they get the most out of what they've got, but he's really the one guy on that team more so than anybody else. That can be a difference maker, and he has been that player. I mean, and he's had to be for them to be successful. So, you know, I think more than anything, that's why he is in the conversation.
I do want to throw out there also, he was tied not only for the league lead in points, but also in plus minus. He's a plus 21, including non-conference games this year. So, I mean, that's a truly impressive impressive season for him, and he really especially if you're talking about, you know, whether you're talking about outstanding players or valuable players or whatever.
He's all of them.
He's both.
Yeah. The thing with him, from my standpoint, and this kind of is self-fulfilling, but he seems to be his best in the biggest games. You know, he's been awesome in their games against Michigan. And, you know, when you see him on TV, he's always doing things. Of course, the biggest games are on TV, so you don't really get the chance to, from if you're out of region so much, get to see what he does on a, you know, regular series against Lake State on the road or something like that. But that element of his game, you know, and the knack for getting highlights and games that people are watching more of, speaks well to his leadership.
Yeah. And, you know, talking to him, just a few weeks ago, he was talking about how in the big games and then, you know, in general, he realized that it's not all about trying to do everything yourself, but you got to make the most of what's around you. And I think he grew in that way this year. And while he produced big results in the big games, it wasn't so much. If I think about his performance against Michigan a few weeks ago this year and then versus last year, where you could really see he was really trying to do it himself. And then this year, ultimately, you know, maybe the score sheet makes it look like he did it, but he really found a way to use his teammates, and I think he's become a more effective player because of that, and I think the conference scoring title reflects that difference.
Yeah. Hunwick, most valuable, probably is his best case, most outstanding, maybe not as much, although he has had an outstanding year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we talk about Torrey Krug and his leadership and putting his team on his back, and I think Sean Hunnam's kind of done the same thing for Michigan, you know. Obviously a great story. I think everybody knows that by this point, so we don't need to dwell on that, but this team was really down in the dumps around Thanksgiving, around the time they played Union. They also lost Northeastern that weekend and went up to Alaska and lost a game. But then they finally kind of got back on track with a win against Alaska to close out the first half, and then went out and won the GLI and, you know, really didn't look back much in the second half. And that's due heavily to Hunwick's play. He has put up impressive numbers, you know, in conference play. He's 1.93 goals against and a .937 save percentage. So those are pretty good numbers. So I guess I don't want to make it sound like he hasn't had an outstanding year, because statistically he's been really good, and he'll leave Michigan, you know, to everybody's surprise, you know, one of their best statistical goalies of all time. But, you know, really I think it's the influence he's had on his team's psyche and the way that they approach games. You know, he's, you know, fiercely competitive, and remembers every little detail about every game. And, you know, he's really been able to build on that experience and get better and better, in the big stage as times come. You know, you saw him lose in overtime in Fort Wayne a couple years ago in the regional final, and then, make it all the way to the national title game this year. And, I think from losing those games, you know, he takes that home with him from the summer and, you know, works hard every single day and, you know, watching film, playing in practice, and has really kept his cool throughout games. And that's been a good example for this Michigan team that lost some of its top players after last year. And that good example, I think, has had a really positive effect on young guys like Guptill and the rest of the freshman class who've stepped in and made this team maybe even better than the team last year that arguably was more talented on paper.
You know, two things about Hunwick, and James, correct me if, or anybody for that matter, correct me if I'm wrong. Nobody looks worse doing a great job than him.
Yeah.
He is all over the place. I mean,
he doesn't pass the looks test.
No. I mean, he's not Marty Brodeur. He's cartwheeling and, you know, flopping and
sliding on one knee and throwing
his leg in the air. Basically everything short of, you know, throwing his stick at the shooter. But he produces. And the second thing, I think, is you mentioned his competitiveness and kind of his fiery nature and just hating to lose. You know, for all the talent that Michigan has had in the past few years, you know, I think that emotional spark might have been something that they really lacked. You know, they were kind of very programmed to go out and perform and do the job without a lot of emotion. At least it was something that, you know, from a distance, that's the way it seemed. Was that, you know, they were there to do a job and they did it efficiently, but, you know, maybe not with a lot of emotion. But, you know, obviously Hunwick brings that to that team, and you know, I think it's something that they needed. They need a little scrappiness. They need a little edge, and he's been the guy to bring that to them. And stuff like that's contagious.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think the thing with Michigan is they're always talented enough to make it to the NCAA tournament, as they've done for more than 20 years in a row. And they're usually talented enough to win a game there. Some years they do, some years they don't. And that, for most teams, will be considered a success. So really, for 20 years, we haven't seen a Michigan team that was really a failure, per se, other than maybe the disappointment of the 97 team that did win a national title when they were, you know, probably the best team in the country that year. But there was never that desperation in Michigan, because they were always going to be not a failure. Does that make any sense? And now Hunwick comes in and he kind of redefines it and says, no, screw that. I want to win a national championship.
Yeah, I think there was always kind of that comfort level that they were guaranteed a certain measure of success, whether that was, you know, being in the top two in the CCHA or always getting a bid to the NCAA tournament.
Losing the afternoon game at the Frozen.
Well, yeah, there's that.
They were good at that.
Yeah, they were. But, you know, you think back
to... But how many teams would love that opportunity?
Well, and the other thing, you think back to that... I think back to that game against Air Force.
Yeah.
Was that in Bridgeport a few years
yep.
ago?
Yes, I guess it was. Probably,
you know, and even then, did you really get a sense of any urgency or any desperation from Michigan?
I didn't.
You know, maybe that whole thing was born out of... a couple of years ago when they you know, when they weren't going to make the NCAA tournament and basically had to win the CCHA championship to get in, and they did.
Yeah.
But yeah, he kind of, I think he kind of embodies that, that, you know, that the spirit of this team.
You know, one other thing I give him credit for, when it comes to evaluating his body of work this year and being valuable and outstanding at, the numbers he's put up are not only outstanding, but he's played more minutes than every goalie in the league except for Andrew Hammond. You know, Connor Knapp has some really impressive numbers, and Jared Koros had a pretty good year at Northern Michigan, but you know, both of them have played, you know, 10 fewer games than Hunwick. And so he's really been the exception of two or three games in January, I want to say, where he was out with an injury. You know, he's been durable. He's been consistent, especially since the beginning of December. And you know, I think he deserves some credit for that, where, you know, Connor Knapp's been consistently good in most every game he's played in the second half, but he's also been able to be spelled by, well, more than spelled by Cody Reichard. You know, so I guess maybe I think that takes another level of mental toughness and dedication to do that every single night in a league where there's a lot of goaltending tandems.
Yeah,
he's got a little battling Billy Smith in him too.
Yeah, he doesn't mess around.
21 PIMs.
The yeah.
including a fiver, I think 5 and a 10.
Yeah, I want to say he got a 5 and a 10 there, and
up at Northern,
yeah.
Early
got a little trip to the locker room.
If you're making a detractor's point about, you know, giving him credit for the Michigan culture and the winning and the competitiveness and what he means to that team, this is a team that was, you know, 7-8-2, and then they had a 5-game unbeaten streak, you know, around GLI time, and then they got John Merrill back. So that record has changed, you know, I think. That aligns pretty clearly to me, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I think you can make that case, but if you look at this is devil's advocate too, and you know, the other thing you can say when you hear numbers like these is, well, Merrill came back, so obviously the defense got better, but since the first of the year, 1.42 goals against and 955 save percentage.
Right.
So,
and you know, Hunwick will be the first one to admit to you that Johnny Merrill's had a huge effect on his results. So that's certainly a fair point that I've heard straight out of Hunwick's mouth.
All right, let's get to Riley Smith. New bus. I know you had some stuff that you found on him, and we'll find a way to get him into the Trackler. I don't know if he'll be on the big board, but he'll be discussed in our Hobie Tracker this week. This is a guy who's really, really lifted his game over the last month or so. 2 months, I guess.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. And this is something we brought up, I think, in the power rankings a couple weeks ago. Was, you know, he's up to 26 goals now. And the second leading scorer on the Red Hawks has 29 points.
Right.
So he's almost outgoaled his entire team. You know, he's got a quarter of the team's goals. They've scored 103. And, you know, he obviously has 26. Here's the thing. You know, obviously, and the other thing we have to remember is, you know, they got off to a terrible start. Miami did. And they played a little bit better over, you know, around the as the holidays drew near. But still, you know, they were about a 500 team by the time the Christmas break hit. But they've been, I think they've only lost maybe three or four times since January 1st. And this stat is just amazing to me. Last 15 games, Smith has 14 goals, 21 points. And it seems like every time that they've had a big weekend or they've needed production, he's come up with goals. Not just points, goals.
Yeah.
You know, 2 goals against Ohio State, 3 goals this weekend against Ohio State, goals both nights against Notre Dame. I mean, he's been unreal. You know, when they swept Western, he had a hat trick one night, scored all three. You know, they scored 7 goals against in a sweep of Western. He had 4 of them.
You know, I look at even more a more drastic breakdown than that. His first 21 games, he had 19 points, and then his next 13 games, he had 19 points.
So yeah, he's been
almost doubled his production.
Yeah. In about 40% of the game.
Yeah. So,
I mean, basically, when he scores, they win. That's pretty much. I mean, I guess you can't really boil down a player's value to anything more simple than that, you know?
When he scores, they're 14-3-2.
That's when he scores a goal, yep.
When he does not score a goal, 7-10.
Yeah, that's amazing. Even when you look at his breakdown, when he scores at least 1 point, 16-4-2, when he doesn't, 5-9.
Yep.
You know what I like about him too is I don't know how much you guys have watched him play, but I guess the simple answer if you're going to face Miami is, hey, we got to shut down Riley Smith. Then they're under 500 when he doesn't score. It's not that easy. I mean, the guy is truly brilliant. You know, when it comes to goal scoring, he can make a play by himself. He'll finish it on the backside. You know, he'll pick up the trash in front of the net. You know, he'll fire a shot from just inside the blue line, and you know, he can be a sniper. He can be, a magician working the puck around to try and create something. He can be, you know, the Thomas Holmstrom. He does everything, and so he's a really difficult player to game plan for, because if you say, okay, well, we're going to stop him from making all these moves and doing this, he'll find another way. So. You know, I guess that's something that's really impressive to me.
Yeah, it's very impressive, you know.
And plus, another point you make, I'll just lead you into this, is the guys he played with last year, and he hasn't missed a step.
Yeah, you know, and that was something I was I was thinking about when we talked about, you know, throwing out a Hobie Tracker later this week. And you know, where does Riley Smith fit into this mix? You know, I think there maybe was a time when he was, you know, especially during his freshman year, and then again, you know, I think as he grew during his sophomore year, we kind of figured out that, hey, his success is not directly tied to playing on a line with Andy Mealy or being out there with Carter Camper. I mean, he's got some pretty good skills, but I think for a while there, we kind of assumed that he was getting so many goals because he had two unbelievable playmakers playing on his line. Obviously, that's not the case. I mean, the guy just can score. He can flat out score goals. And, I mean, and this season, as James alluded to, I mean, everybody knows they've got to stop him, and they can't stop him.
I mean, then you got to ask yourself, you know, Andy Mealy was a Hobie winner last year, and he was a great all-around player, could make a ton of different plays, but his bread and butter was his assist total. And for him to run up the kind of just silly assist numbers he was running up last year, he needed somebody to finish it, and that was Riley Smith. You know, so I think, I think we were looking at it saying, okay, is Andy Mealy, is Carter Camper making Riley Smith look good? Maybe it was just as much so Riley Smith as making Andy Mealy look good.
He scored 28 goals last year, and he's probably going to top that this year. I would think, well, he'll be close. So, you know, when you're getting 60 goals in back-to-back seasons, or, you know, totaling 60 goals in consecutive seasons. That's somebody with skill. That's just not a guy standing at the goal mouth with his stick on the ice.
Right. Right.
And you know, the other thing too, for a guy that has a ton of goals, only 8 of them on the power play.
I was just going to say the same thing. He gets a lot of even strength goals.
I know that's not Austin Smith territory, but still, it's pretty good.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk more about that in the Hobie Tracker this week. Another teaser point that we wanted to bring up, and you guys can look into it if you can't wait. Like most people, can't wait for the Hobie Tracker to come out.
I can't. I have to shut my phone off.
Look at. I usually take a day off from work that week, at least a half day. Look at Austin Smith's point production in shorthanded and even strength situations relative to the other top scorers in the country. You know, for guys like Spencer Abbott and Jack Conley, they're getting about half their points on the power play. Austin Smith's getting like 11 out of 50, 12 out of 50.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So we're going to bring that into consideration, and we'll detail that a little more in there. But something you guys can be on the lookout for.
And I know we had a big discussion about this in a podcast practice we had a couple weeks ago, or a week or so ago. But
yeah, we did have technical difficulties. I know we got out of schedule a little bit. We had a technical difficulty. So
the podcast was so good, it wouldn't stick to the – it wouldn't convert to ones and zeros.
Digital media could not handle it.
Could not.
Could not handle me.
It's like we need twos and threes. This is so good.
Yeah.
Binary just can hold. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the topics that we discussed was, you know, as a Hobie voter, do you place a premium on the percentage of even strength points a player scores? You know, if two guys have 50 points, let's say, does the guy who has 20 power play points deserve less credit than the guy who maybe has 10 power play points? And I don't know that we ever came to a consensus, and I think kind of what we had it boiled down to is if it's a close decision between two guys, maybe it does become a factor, but it's not a main factor. But it's something to think about for sure.
Yeah, every voter has different criteria, and that's what they, you know, that's what they use. A lot of people value the character and community service and academic aspect of it. Some people don't value that at all. They don't even consider it. You know, they think it's a hockey award. So all those things will go into it, and we'll have the Trackler this week, so we can talk about that kind of thing. And speaking of the Hobie, we have a Hobie voter joining the podcast right now. Pleased to bring in WCHA senior writer Jess Myers.
Do I get to be a special guest?
You're a special guest of this podcast.
Yes! Oh, I knew I'd make it someday.
You are.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Jess.
Good to be here. Hello. Sorry I'm late.
That's all right.
So, I kind of consider myself the closer. You bring me in the late innings.
Wow.
Go get the lefty. Call him up.
You're left-handed?
I am left-handed.
That's pretty cool.
My father and grandfather were, and I've produced two left-handed children, so.
So they're right shots.
It's a thing. It's a thing with us.
Good. Good deal. We haven't talked much. You know, we did a little bit of around the horn and did a little just to fill you in before you listen tomorrow. done some Hobie chatter. You caught.
Don't spoil it. I want to be surprised.
Yeah.
That's all right.
We sent you messages that you're going to hear in the future, and it's just going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
How do they know?
Your time machine is sweet.
Yeah.
We did a little around the horn stuff, and one of the questions I posed to Kevin as we're headed into the last weekend of the Hockey East regular season also applies in the WCHA. Which team or teams have the most to gain, and what do you expect from those teams in those series?
I think, you know, among the teams that has the most to gain, the conference title is all but decided. I mean, the top two teams are set in Minnesota and Minnesota Duluth. But I think, you know, the teams that have the most to gain are kind of in that mess down in the 5, 6, 7, 8 range where they're still fighting for home ice. You know, Michigan Tech has been a good story all year, and they're just 1 point behind Nebraska-Omaha. Now they have to go out to Colorado, so that will be a tough trip for them going out to Colorado College. Granted, this might be the right time to catch the Tigers because they haven't played well in a couple weeks, and you know, injuries has been part of it, and inconsistent play and goal. You know, they've been just a mess recently. So the Tigers have gone cold at the wrong time, and maybe the Huskies can catch them and overtake them.
They're the Notre Dame of the West, aren't they?
I would put them in that category. I mean, I was among the few people that picked them to win the WCHA title, but I was not among a few people who picked them, you know, top three in the WCHA, and they have failed to live up to those expectations.
Yeah, it's a weird weekend in the WCHA in that, you know, where there are things at stake is in the middle. It's not right. Really, you know, like you said, Minnesota's, you know, needs basically a win.
Right.
And it's done. Duluth's going to finish second.
And, you know, a couple
Denver's
weeks
most likely
ago.
Likely going to finish third, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah, that's looking pretty strong. A couple weeks ago, you know, if you're a Minnesota fan, you were eyeing that Wisconsin series thinking 4 easy points. And all of a sudden, you know, the Badgers have gotten a little bit more life recently. They've won 3 in a row and went on the road and got a sweep, which is something, you know, they'd won 1 game on the road all season and hadn't swept anybody away from home, obviously. So this is a Badgers team that, you know, I don't expect a lot from them, you know, as far as playing deep into March. But they've suddenly found some life and are a little plucky.
I to get back to CC a little bit, you know, I maybe maybe caught them in one of those situations where the game I did see is the one they won recently. That game was televised against Nebraska-Omaha.
Yep.
They've got some nice parts. You know, that first line is very, very good. And they've got some good wins out of the league. That's a dangerous team. I wouldn't want to match up with them in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last year in the NCAA tournament, especially, yeah. Even you know, not expecting much from them, there are some weapons there. I mean, the Schwartz brothers have not gone away, and in fact, this year they're healthier than they were a year ago. So that's a team with great potential, which is why I picked them where I did, and they've just, you know, haven't shown it on an every night basis.
They've been a weird team. I mean, you could probably.
It could be the grand marshal of the 2011-12 college hockey season.
Yeah. I mean, guys getting hurt and, you know.
Wait a minute. You're telling me a school that's the size of most high schools where you take one class for 3 weeks at a time is weird? Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing against Colorado College. Fine institution. But it's always been a little, you know, they do things a little differently there.
Well, and, you know, one goalie's playing, and then the other goalie's playing, and then one goalie's playing. You know, they've kind of rotated. I mean, it hasn't been a guy on Friday and a guy on Saturday. It's been one guy's in for 3, and then the other guy's in for 4, and one guy's in for 4, you know. And just guys dinged up and in and out of just.
Yeah. Go be captain of Canada for the biggest tournament in that country outside of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And,
yeah, and that didn't end so well.
And, I mean, you know, Scott Owens talked about that. I did a notebook piece on them. It's got to be a month and a half ago now. But he just said, you know, he was waiting for a goalie to step up. Now, the last time I saw them in person, January 20th, they won 2-1 at Minnesota. And Josh Thornburg, you know, was outstanding. 38 saves in that one, and the Tigers get a 2-1 win. They, you know, they score late to weird game. They get a goal early in the second period. They're up 1-0 most of the game. Gophers finally tie it up with like a minute and change left. You know, they pull the goalie, Nick Bjugstad scores, and then on the next shift, CC gets a goal and wins 2-1. And I really thought at that point, you know, this is a team that's really coming on. And that was maybe the last, you know, kind of flash out of them, and they've been just up and down all over the place since then.
Yeah, I think they split. Well, and then the next weekend they beat and tied Denver.
Right.
They did split. They split with Minnesota that weekend. I remember watching both of those games.
Yep. A couple of great hockey games.
Yeah, they were both low scoring but close games, one goal games, and then they came back and shut out Denver at Denver, and then tied them the next night, and then.
They make trips to Bemidji State and Minnesota Duluth and wind up with 0 points out of both of those.
Yeah, and Gladie and I were talking about the game on Friday a little bit, at the one at Duluth, where they trade, you know, they come back from 3-0 to tie it.
Yep.
And then give up a goal in overtime.
JT Brown, one-timer. You know, apparently he's not that injured.
No, I guess not. So you got to wonder if something like that maybe took a little bit of the wind out of the sails.
Yeah.
I guess I maybe just realized some of this, but not realized it, but for going back to the Hobie Tracker, the top 10 is announced this week.
Wait, this week?
Is it this week or?
I thought it was the weekend of the league tournaments.
Right, I think it's still.
Okay.
I thought it was still 2 weeks out.
Yeah, I think it's 2 weeks from Thursday.
All right. Yeah.
Usually in past history, I've gotten the word about who they are at the WCHA Awards Bank, which is always like on the Thursday of Final Five week.
Okay. Yep, yeah, yep. March 15 is top 10. My bad.
Okay.
You're scaring me.
Oh, that March 1 is the vote for Hobie phase is over. Sorry.
Small difference.
Yeah.
I had that on my calendar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Rick Santorum is the leader, right?
Perhaps he is. We'll find out.
Did you get a robocall, Bus? I want to know.
Did I get a robocall?
Yeah. Were you one of the Michigan people who got a robocall from Santorum?
I did not get a robocall. I got many robocalls.
That was the worst sequel ever to RoboCop.
Yeah.
Okay. Push down on the movie stuff. We can't get there yet.
Yeah. But it's not going to be as funny. If it's not going to be as funny later.
Yeah.
I don't even know who else is here. By the way, Kevin, I heard. Are you?
Everybody's here.
Doubt's here.
No,
I'm here.
All
somebody's
right.
At a dog fight.
Dowd, you've got unbelievable background noises down there.
It happens.
You got crickets and folks.
Dogs, yeah. There's a bunch of dogs tonight. I don't really know what's going on.
Will you feed the chickens so they quiet down, please? Yeah,
Manny Pacquiao's chasing a chicken.
Easy.
Training for his next fight.
Yeah.
I guess I've gotten used to it now, but like when I first moved down here, it's just like the cycle at like 5 a.m. the sun starts to come up, and then the roosters wake up, and then they wake up the dogs. It's just this big back and forth.
Yeah, it must be a terrible place to live.
When you get on a bus there, do they have live chickens on the bus?
not on the bus, but
or is that just in movies?
Okay.
No, because of bird flu, the fowl are not allowed on the bus.
Well, they're allowed to walk through grocery stores. So.
Only livestock.
All right. Anyway, Jess, my question for you is, and I've got a couple names in mind. I don't know why I'm so locked in on the Hobie tonight, but after Conley, WCHA's next best candidates, Schultz and Shore? Schultz-Bjugstad?
Yeah, I would put Shore right up there. Bukestad obviously has made a very strong case. I mean, I'm in the Twin Cities, and I'm hearing from a lot of people, oh, he's the best player in college hockey. And he's not quite that, but, you know, this is a kid who's going to make a lot of money someday and can score goals and has got size and has had a real nice year. And Schultz, obviously, in terms of MVP, you know, you talk about a guy who has meant a lot to his team. I put him right up there. The biggest problem I think Connolly's running into is just kind of that logjam from his own team in the fact that, you know, he's got Travis Oleksik, who's second in the WCHA in scoring. He's got JT Brown, who is currently fifth. So, you know, it's becoming one of those who's the best player, who do you pick kind of situations for the Bulldogs, I think.
Yeah, that it seems like a lot of teams run into that from year to year, and this year it might be Minnesota Duluth's turn.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, Miami last year, BC in recent seasons. So.
Right. The most famous case of that, of course, was the year that Michigan had the three candidates, and they supposedly kind of split the vote, which helped Chris Marinucci win the trophy.
Yeah.
The Chester Arthur of Hobie winners.
only player on a sub-500 team to win it.
Was that one of those deals where that happened and then they changed all the voting procedures?
I don't think so. No, I wasn't a voter then, but the legend was that they asked Red Berenson, which of these three guys is your best player, and he wouldn't single one of them out.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
You know,
the legend.
It's the like legend.
Paul Bunyan cast his vote for Chris Marinucci, but Pecos Bill would have none of it.
Whenever I think of Red Berenson, I think of Paul Bunyan.
We're glad he thinks of Michigan. He thinks of Paul Bunyan.
That's true. I wasn't going to say it.
He even dresses like him.
That's true.
Sort of.
I have dressed like him. I don't dress like him regularly. As far as you know.
What you do in the privacy of your own home is your business.
Hey, I'm not even going to say it. Want to check out the Blue Ox?
Yeah. I knew that was where we were going.
Oh, yeah. We're there.
That destination was easy to easy to figure out.
It was a short bus ride.
No breadcrumbs necessary to find that trail.
Put your tray tables in the upright and locked position.
Yeah. What, any last call on hockey chatter? I guess, you know, one thing I didn't bring up that I could, since we put it on some of the other doubt, especially biggest potential upset or most likely potential upset in ECAC hockey is clearly to me RPI, 10th place RPI at 7th place Clarkson. That's the one that stands out to me. And if form were to hold, in other leagues, you're looking at an RPI, another series, I mean, you're looking at an RPI Union quarterfinal series, which would be great for that area.
Yeah.
So, good stuff there.
How far apart are those schools? About 15 miles or something?
A little further, but...
Oh, not even that far.
It's all highway.
15 miles?
It's further than 15 miles.
But that's like greater Albany, right?
Yeah. It's basically like an Albany beltway. One is a northern suburb and one is a western suburb.
Only time I was ever in Albany, I met Gladdy, and that pretty much clouded out everything else.
That's the first time anybody's used great in Albany in the same sentence.
Wow.
It's not true.
Yeah. It's great to be leaving Albany.
Easy.
I had a nice time in Albany. What are we talking about? It seemed like a fine town. I took a tour of the state capitol even. Come on.
like Castle Grayskull.
It was kind of Castle Grayskull like.
Yeah, I went there and got an award from Elliot Spitzer, and then he was on the news.
I saw a goalie win the Hobie. I mean, come on.
I saw that.
I saw another goalie get screened by Brian Gionta.
Yeah, we all saw that.
Everyone saw that except Carl Gehring.
Yeah.
I saw somebody pull their goalie with 4 minutes left. A lot of memories.
Speaking of Albany, it was obviously former host site of the ECAC Hockey Championship weekend. Let me throw this one out there. Binghamton, New York. Remember that.
How big is the home of the Bingo Sens?
The B Sens. Capacity is only 4,700. But
that's a conference tournament, Jess, though, that's been having a hard time drawing 5,000-6,000.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Even when it was in Albany, it was sparsely attended.
Yeah, the only chance they had was a Cornell Union final in Albany. Because it was, for many people, the first Union hockey game they've ever been to. wait, what?
Wow. Is Lake
national championship game.
Is Lake Placid still in the mix? Do they still go there?
Lake Placid has been hosting the Division III Frozen, which is the same weekend.
Got it.
I don't know how long that agreement is, or if it's a year-to-year thing, or what, or if ECAC Hockey has totally decided that's not an option anymore. But I think a Binghamton Providence Albany return might be in the future.
A regular rotation, if you will.
I don't know if it'll be a rotation, but I think I don't know if this Atlantic City situation is too sustainable.
Got it.
So.
Bus, from my recollections from the league, the biggest stumbling block with Lake Placid is the ice size. The fact that it's Olympic ice and not one of the 12 schools play on Olympic ice. Yeah. The coaches, I think, always had a bit of a gripe with deciding the championship that way, given that the regular season is a completely different game almost.
Yep. But
where do the Adirondackians play?
Glens Falls
Civic Center, yes. That's
which hosts the New York State High School Basketball Championships that weekend.
Yeah. I was going to say, and that might be only 4,000, Gladdy?
Yeah, it's about the same size as Bingo.
Yeah.
Syracuse might, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? There's a lot. There's a lot of places they could go, and it doesn't.
Unfortunately, none of them very good.
Well, it is what you make of it. I mean, I don't know. The way I look at things, you know, if people don't want to go to Albany, fine, don't go. The people who are there will have fun.
And that's the way it is with every one of them.
Yeah. And if you're a college hockey fan who likes to complain about college hockey, then are you really a college hockey fan? You know, I don't know. The refs this, and that rink this, and the attendance this. Shut up. Watch the game.
Amen.
There's my stand.
I went through Glens Falls once. Nice little part of the state.
The foothills of the Adirondacks.
Hey, Gladdy, how do you feel about Fort Field?
How do I feel about Ford Field? It's a great football rink. Great football rink.
Although to be fair, that
you even listen to yourself when you talk.
the games were pretty awesome that year too.
The ice was bad. The games were bad. And what I always said was,
or so I'm told, since I couldn't see them.
Yeah, I've said it numerous times on the podcast. They had to try it once. You had to try it. And they did. They made a shot. Didn't work. It won't happen again. There you go.
They had to try the stadium concept, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
though, like basketball does.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try.
Yeah, it was...
Yeah, with all the Winter Classic stuff and outdoor games and, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, basketball, I guess, if you want to say that. But I think
they tried the warm weather thing in 99, and it was a marginal success, so I guess we're doing it again.
Yeah. Yup.
Mm-hmm.
All right, deterioration. Thou shalt end the podcast with deterioration. So it is
ready. Trying to get there for 10 minutes and you keep raining us onto hockey.
Yeah,
talk.
No kidding.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about...
Kevin, what did I say about complaining?
We were talking about RoboCop. Just enjoy it. When you mentioned RoboCop, it reminded me of something... that I heard today. I was listening to a non-sports related podcast.
like this one.
Yeah, very similar to this one. except people like it. And,
wow.
And they were talking about how in China, they basically have no copyright laws, or their copyright laws are so flimsy that all you need to do is basically change like one little piece of a known character, or a copyright, like a character that's copyrighted in the U.S. in order to, you know, be able to put it on the market in China. So they were selling these knockoff RoboCop action figures in China. But the box said Robert Cop.
Nice.
They had Superman, a Superman action figure, but it was called Special Man.
Special Man.
Yeah, it was terrific. They had Spider-Man instead of Spider-Man.
It's like,
James Spader. Darth Vader was riding a meter maid scooter. And Batman on silver. Batman riding the Lone Ranger's horse silver. You could get all these in China. Makes me want to go, actually.
You'd go all the way to China just for that.
Well,
Isn't that what eBay's for?
Yeah.
There's
a global marketplace.
Possibly. I'll try the Kung Pao chicken.
God, you know, that's one thing that really annoys me is all the not just Chinese, but foreign knockoffs of NHL hockey jerseys that just look friggin' terrible. And yet people wear them proudly.
Yeah, if you're getting a jersey, do it right.
If Jager is spelled with a Y, don't buy it.
Well, it's not that bad, but it's just like the lettering is all wrong, and it's like, okay, you claim to be a real Blackhawks fan, but you know, instead of spending $120 on a real jersey, you spend $60 and get one that looks like fill in the blank, you know?
The Indian head is pointing the wrong way.
Yeah. It's just like, come on. Well,
I see a lot of that around here with Yankees jerseys that have names on the back. Drives me nuts.
Yep.
Jeter 2. No, just 2.
Jeter's spelled with a G.
The captain! Exclamation point.
It's got a C on it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. If you're doing jerseys, do them right. The end.
You know, there's
font matters. Names and numbers matter.
Yep.
When I was in
C's and A's matter.
Oh, they do.
When I was in college in Duluth at the mall, there was a store called Team Spirit, or you know, one of those fanfare where they sell like all team apparel.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain. work there. Oh,
that's
team,
right.
Team spirit.
But, you know, they never had any UMD stuff. You could get, like, Gopher stuff and all this. So, you know, a bunch of us complained, hey, why don't you sell any UMD stuff? So they made a big show of, hey, they were going to sell UMD hockey jerseys. And I went in there. Someone had taken the Gopher hockey jersey and put a bulldog head on the front of it. They're like, oh, yeah, UMD stuff. I'm like, you got to be kidding. And now, of course, I wish, like, crazy I had bought one. Because, like, they only had him on display for about a week and then said, no, get rid of
it. It was just a gopher head with, like, a bone in his mouth.
<That's right. laughs> Like, they put a spiked collar on yeah. Goldie Gopher.
This is Goldie Gopher in a doghouse. Like, laying on top of it like Snoopy. But there was a, you know, you mentioned get your jersey right. And I know that this is a, it's a reoccurring feature on the Yahoo Hockey website,
yeah.
Puck Daddy, where they have jersey
phones. Oh, yeah.
But there's a commercial, and I don't know if they show it in the States, because I don't think I've seen it. But on CBC, they have a commercial during the during Hockey Night in Canada promoting the NHL shop. The whatever, shop.nhl.ca. And they show people wearing jerseys that are complete jersey fouls. Like, one woman's wearing a Canadian's jersey that said, like, 24, and the name is Dynasty on the back.
Oh, yeah, there's a guy in a Jets jersey that says, we're back, or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's somebody, you know, somebody's wearing a Hurricanes jersey that says 30, and it says, in Cam, we trust.
Oh, good.
So if you see that guy, I mean, first of all, punch him in the head. Because he's stupid.
And then when you're charged with assault, just say, no, it was okay. They said I could do it on the Hitch podcast.
I heard it on a podcast.
That's an airtight defense in any court of law.
I'm not a big fan of the Detroit Sucks name on Blackhawks jerseys either.
Yeah, cheer for your team.
That's what I always say. And go figure, as soon as those chants stopped happening when they were playing Edmonton, they went and won the cup. But yeah.
Yeah, just yeah, think it through, people. You're not as clever as you think you are, or trust me. And if you think you are, I'd tell you.
Have you guys seen the website called Straight Cash Homie?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Where it's like the jerseys of shame.
No, that's mostly like hipsters wearing basketball jerseys, though, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. Yeah, they go. Yeah, they like at music festivals, Pitchfork and stuff like that.
Yeah, stop.
It's like, yeah.
We should do an Inch podcast live from a music festival like that sometime.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be the best deterioration ever.
Go to like Bonnaroo.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be terrific.
Bus will have heard of all of the bands, and none of us will have.
Yeah.
And then in true hipster style, if you say, oh, I like this band, Bus would say, yeah, but I only like their early stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked them 4 years ago.
Yeah. Before they got popular.
Before they came to this music festival with all your front runners.
Sold out.
Sold out.
He's wearing a basketball jersey.
Yeah.
The guy wearing the Sean Bradley Sixers jersey, he sold out.
He just did that so he could get on the internet.
Although, Trampled by Turtles is playing Bonnaroo this year, Jess.
Nice.
Which is, I mean, Bonnaroo's
band.
Yeah, Duluth band.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. One of the guys is from Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear the story? I think it was Sean Bradley. Somebody stole his like custom-made bicycle. It's like, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with a bicycle made for somebody
who's 7'6"? I think it was Sean Bradley.
If the cops are smart, they just go right to like Mark Eaton's house.
Yeah. All right, give us the bike. What bike? You know. Don't make this hard.
Sean Bradley's bike is like those old turn of the century bikes with a giant front wheel, except it's like that on both wheels.
You need a really big mustache to ride it.
It's like
holy.
It's like those guys on Family Guy who are like lifting the trapezoid weights, and they have the singlet with one strap.
The Andre the Giant outfit.
Exercise. Oh. Bully. Brilliant.
Derby hats.
Yeah.
Bowler hats. Fair enough. So Kentucky Derby, fellas. Getting close.
I hope a horse doesn't run into a track dryer and blow up.
Fantastic.
They can get this one in.
Well, they don't have to. If that happens at the Derby, we won't have to spend 2 hours patching dirt. That's a good thing.
Best line I heard on Twitter was after the race was over, they said, "You got to feel bad for Kenseth because no matter what he does, he's only going to have the second best burnout of the night."
Yeah, that was an interesting race.
Good start to the season, NASCAR.
Daytona is always a disaster. One year the track comes apart, one year the most legendary guy in racing bites it on the last lap.
Yeah. While his, like, you know, son and then his personal driver who'd never won a race before was, like, going on to win and creating a good story.
Yeah. That was the craziest thing. That thing last night, it was unreal.
Yeah, it was a little bizarre.
What happened to his car? Did, like, the axle break or something?
I think the whole thing broke.
Yeah, they said the transmission locked up or something.
All right, no more NASCAR.
Why?
Just because.
It's good. Glad he's calling a moratorium.
Let's get a little spring training in here for balance.
I bought a Mets T-shirt, Gladdy.
Why?
It was on sale.
Of course, that's why you bought it.
It says Reyes number 7 on the back.
I apologize for asking such a silly question.
You think I'd pay full price? Come on.
No, I never thought that.
No.
That's right, we've met.
You're just as bad as those hipsters wearing Dino Raja basketball jerseys. Although I have an Alexi Yashin and Isles T-shirt, so I really can't.
Is it signed by Carol Alt?
So now, hold on, let's get this on the record here. Dowd and Buss have both brought up the Islanders tonight, and I have not.
You did in the first whatever minutes.
No, Dowd did.
No, I brought it up. He just commented on me bringing it up.
I have an update on their playoff standing, or their march to the playoff.
Be gone. They were showing the Eastern Conference standings during the game tonight. It was brutal. Like, the Habs are, like, 2 points behind 10th. And they're last in the conference.
The Islanders were behind Hamilton.
Anyway.
Wow.
Is it little Jerry Seinfeld in the background there, Tom?
Can you say cockfight on a podcast?
Yes, you can.
What the hell was that?
Parable. I thought that was going to be the Islanders' playoff outlook.
I like mine better.
Yeah. Yo. So what did you guys think of the NBA All-Star game?
They had one?
Yeah, exactly. My favorite headline out of spring training or baseball injury reports is pitcher throws off mound. Oh, really? That's amazing. Why would he do such a thing?
I haven't paid attention. The Twins are going to be rotten, so.
Oh. Oh. When your most exciting pitching prospect goes out with an injury and it's not even March, that's a bad sign.
No, it's a bad sign when Joel Zumaya is your most exciting pitching prospect.
Okay, fine. Detroit people, chime in. I was excited
about it. Poor Joel Zumaya.
He throws the straight ball very much.
The most exciting thing happening at Target Field this summer is they're unveiling a Kent Herbeck statue, and it's long overdue. Oh,
God. No, I would disagree.
How do you really feel, Gladdy?
My favorite all-time Twin.
I am a Twins fan, and I hate the guy.
He was my favorite.
At least he didn't get sympathy voted into the Hall of Fame. He's got that going for him.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, Dale Murphy and his magic underwear will just have to wait another year.
That was my favorite children's book.
Such thing as an appropriate joke. That's why it's a joke.
His underwear must not be very magic. He better go talk to Zenu or whoever.
What are you talking about?
You saw the numbers on our Mormon listenership. Now just be careful.
I don't want to.
I'm not getting any of these jokes.
What?
The magic underwear? What are you, talking about?
And it's going back and forth between Bus and Jess, and you're just like, what?
All right.
You didn't listen to yourself when you talk.
See, Dale Murphy is a religion. Of a religion.
Certain. Yes, he is.
And they wear magic underwear. Didn't you know this?
No.
Yeah. It's on the internet, so it's true.
Okay. All right. I'll go with it. Yeah.
So.
We're getting like a nasty freezing rain thing here. Anybody else getting
that? Oh, yeah, you got the big storm.
Yeah, we were supposed to get
freezing. I definitively am not getting that.
Maybe it'll shut up all the barnyard animals.
I could use that.
It's going to rain.
The Blackie weather forecast.
Thanks, Ollie.
Swimming hole.
People look like ants.
Chunky.
Who wants this dog?
All right. Ollie, everybody.
That's why they call it deterioration, folks.
Terrible. Okay. All right. Anybody else want to continue to make a fool of ourselves?
No, I'll save my Twitter for the next time.
Oh yeah, we got a Twitter rant coming.
Yeah, I'll save it. Get it. I'll just say this: get all the bad tweets out of your system, because you're gonna reap the whirlwind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did we talk trade deadline at all or anything there?
There was none. Okay.
Tom Gilbert came home. Former Inch A to Z subject.
Paul Gostad.
He gone. Whitney Houston.
Oh boy.
Hey now.
All right. Okay.
Just wait. We got some late breaking Islanders news.
Well, I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Terrible. Okay. Kevin Zeiss, thank you. You're welcome. Dowd, thank you.
Good talking to you, Matt.
Chess. thank you for joining in progress.
Glad I could make it right at the end there.
Bus, thank you for everything.
just silence?
Yeah. Wow.
He's trying to dig.
Do we have a clip here? I thought we had a clip here. Do we have a clip?
No, go to the tape.
Trying to dig through the soundboard.
B-roll. Where's my B-roll?
Joe Gladyszewski.
Pick two.
This has been the Seriously Deteriorated Inch Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Just a bunch of hoseheads. I'm glad we're done with these guys. Yeah!